You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, episode number 64.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in VoiceOver. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi, my name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to get to know a little bit more about me, feel free to check out my website at andrewdmorrison.com. In this episode, we have my very good friend Rick Wasserman. You may have heard his voice as the gravelly tones of AMC's promos like The Walking Dead, or you may also know him as the zombie's tutorial voice in Black Ops 4. He's also been in numerous roles across DC, Marvel, and beyond, and is even the creator of the Tri-Booth, your one-stop shop for mobile voiceover booths. So in this episode, we're going to talk about bringing out the emotions and the nuances of promo, using something real to make your read sound more real, and the real acting behind voice acting. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm well. It's been a busy day. It's been a good day. After this, I'm going to cook some dinner for my family and relax.
What's on the menu?
Well, something vegan, obviously.
We've been
doing this thing now where we kind of food prep on Sundays. That's what we did. So now I have a number of things already prepared. And so putting it together should be fairly simple. We'll see. We made a vegan lasagna. It is the first vegan lasagna we've had.
Really?
That is just not sort of drenched in nutritional yeast. Like, it tastes like good lasagna. It just happens to be vegan, but it tastes like good lasagna, and there's no fake anything in it. Like, there's no fake chicken or fake sausage or fake. It's all just sort of all kind of whole food stuff. And for some mysterious alchemy's sake, it tastes like lasagna.
So what vegetable, I mean, other than like tomatoes, like what did you like put into the sauces and stuff like that? Or like put
well,
into
there's, to there's give a it ricotta like that in there that is made of tofu and cashews and lemon juice and a whole bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And then there's a tomato sauce that is like a quarter of it is lentils, red lentils.
Okay.
So it's like packed with protein.
Right.
There's a separate mozzarella that is made with cashews and tapioca starch and a few other ingredients that is actually stretchy, which is kind of the holy grail for vegan food, because giving up cheese is usually hard for people. And cheese is particularly hard when it doesn't stretch or melt, but this does. And it's good. It's really good. And it's got like 6 cups of raw spinach in it. They get cooked, but we feel good about the kids eating it. Like, they eat as much as you want. Go, you want another serving? Have more. You know, it's good for you.
So when you're making the mozzarella, do you guys have to like boil it and stuff like that and stretch it kind of like how you would cheese curd? I know there's like a different science to it, but is that part of the process?
Yeah, it is a very different science. This is just tapioca, and like anything, like arrowroot, it really means being mixed with a liquid and being raised to temperature, but it doesn't need to be pulled like actual, you know, milk proteins would have to be.
Okay. I didn't know if you had to like work the proteins, kind of like how you would seitan or something like that.
Nah, you don't have to.
Neat.
So yeah, yummy.
So how do you start your day? How do you take your coffee?
You mean my coffee? Well, funny you should ask. Obviously with some sort of non-dairy milk, but usually oat or almond milk, or my favorite is an almond coconut blend. Is anyone there? Does anyone care about this? All right.
Yeah. Yes,
and,
I do.
And then it is a decaf coffee because I've given up anything sort of fun.
Really?
There's no caffeine. There's no animal products. There's no booze. There's no drugs. It's, yeah.
Oh, mine has caffeine and booze. It's like 8 o'clock at night, so I put a little bourbon in it.
Yeah, mine's pretty tame, and it's got some hazelnut in it, so it's good. It's very tasty.
All right. So, like, what is your origin story to voiceover? Because like you've done theater, you've done like VO for like the past 25 years. Like, how did you kind of get wrapped up into the world of media?
Yeah. I guess I sort of always thought that I would wind up doing voiceover just because, like you, my voice is sort of ear-catching to people. That is, it doesn't sound like everybody's voice. And I got a lot of like, do you do radio? Or, you know, and I always sound like I'm selling a car or like I'm hosting a game show.
Right.
So I just thought at some point I probably will. But there was no indication that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then the story I always tell is that I got out of graduate school after having taken like a weekend class in voiceover in graduate school. And after that weekend, we also had demos. So you can imagine how thoroughly I was prepared.
Right.
But I had an on-camera commercial agent in New York, and I was the Zest soap guy. So
oh, cool.
I was the guy in the shower, zestfully soaping myself up.
Was that your first nude role too?
Yeah, they had to wax me. We shouldn't talk about that.
Right.
And then I met with my agents to kind of re-up my commercial contracts because I was booking. And during that meeting, the voiceover agent walked by the office and heard my voice and peeked his head in and said, do we represent you? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you do voiceover? I went, sure. And he went, come here, and pulled me out. And that guy was my agent and manager for the next 15 years. And that's how I really kind of got started. But I auditioned for 6 months and got nothing. I mean, nothing at all. And at the time I was in The Lion King on Broadway. And I remember going in one day for an audition. This is back in the day when you had to go in to audition at your agents. And they said, Rick, we have an audition for you today. It's a promo. And I said, ah, what sort of thing is that? And he said, it's like a commercial for a TV show. I went, great. So I went in and I read it. And the booth director said, do it like Scar, character that I played in the show. I went, you mean with the voice? No. I just mean approach it the same way you would approach playing something like Scar. Like treat it like an acting gig. You know, don't treat it like I'm going to do a voiceover. I'm going to adjust my voice and model some words and make them sound hands. Don't do any of that. Act. Tell a story. Circumstance, partner, objective, action, obstacle. Use those things that theoretically you went to grad school to learn and see what that does. And I booked it. I owe everything to that booth director that day. I booked it, and that first gig was the promo voice for a new show on HBO at the time, which was called The Wire. Mm-hmm. So I was the voice of The Wire, and then I became the voice of Oz, and then boxing, and then the lineups, and then I was doing HBO. And then one network led to another network. I was the voice of Food Network and A&E for 4 years, and the UFC for 8 years, and ABC Daytime for 8 years, and I just doing more and more and more. And then came animation, and I was Hulk and Thor for Marvel, and it just started kind of filling up. Movie trailers, I started doing movie trailers and documentary narration, and then I became the voice of AMC Network. I became the voice of AMC Network the day A&E Network went away. It was lovely. That's, you know, because networks change and things happen. And they let me go from A&E. I didn't do anything wrong. They just got a new voice. And that day that I was told that I was the voice of AMC. And I went, oh, okay, cool. And they had no original programming at the time, but they were going to try a new show about advertising. which was Mad Men. And it was the first show I did on that network. And then it was Mad Men and Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead and every show on there for 14 plus years. I was the voice of that network.
And promo always sounds like someone's putting on a voice, but there are different like nuances to promo that like kind of like bring out the emotion of like the genre of that show. So how do you kind of dance around that? And how do you kind of like find where your mojo is going to be whenever you're getting a promo read?
That's a great question. And I think that has changed as trends have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, voiceover coming into that real authentic, naturalistic, you know, conversational read that we all are asked to do all the time. I think promo and trailer, for that matter, are two areas where you can still maintain a little bit more of that classic announcer feel. It's still allowable in there. But yeah, even still, you know, what used to be, you know, tonight on Law and Order, where they just want an announcer, now that voice sounds like it could be a judge or a lawyer or a criminal, you know, tonight on Law and Order, you know. So even promos changing. The great thing about AMC, and I'm forever grateful to them for this, was that they really gave me the room to create. Like, I really felt, not like a talking head, but that I was a creator. Like, they would tell me the circumstance of this new show and what did I think it should sound like. Like, no one's doing that. No right. one asks me what I think, but they asked me what I thought. And that way, when I was doing Mad Men or Walking Dead, for that matter, you know, I wasn't just Rick the voiceover announcer. I was Rick the survivor of the zombie apocalypse, warning a fellow survivor and imagining the conditions of walkers above our bunker and going, and my action to warn, listen to me, tonight on The Walking Dead, only on AMC.
That's
right.
Cool.
So like, I could really invest in all the things that I had ever learned in graduate school that I wasn't sure I was ever going to apply. And I did.
Well, what are some other things that you learned in graduate school that have still kind of been relevant to your career now?
I mean, everything. I mean, until I realized it, I just thought they were separate things. I just thought there was my stage acting.
Right.
And then I could dial that down for film and TV acting, which I've done a good deal of. And then there was voiceover way over here, some satellite thing. And then I realized that it's all storytelling and it's all performing arts and it's all built on the same foundation. And once you know that and accept that, it all becomes a lot easier. So it's not like I don't feel like I have to put on a new hat every time I approach some different area of storytelling. It's all right. sort of the same. Obviously some things you have to consider, but here's a great thing that I learned in grad school that I apply all the time in my voice acting. I was in a show once, a play, and in the second act, we had to eat on stage.
Okay.
It was a comedy, and in the second act, we had to eat. And someone made this remark in the cast when we were in the green room sometime after the show. They said, "The show always gets better in the second act, doesn't it? I mean, it's a good show, but every time we do the second act, it gets better." And we all agreed, like, yeah, it always gets better in the second act. And I remember talking to one of my graduate school professors about that. This was like a summer show. We went back to the grad school and kind of told all our stories. And he said, "I know exactly why it got better." I went, "Why?" And he said, "Because you were eating." "Yeah. Was it real food?" "Yeah." "Yeah. Because you were eating real food, it got better." I said, "I don't get it." And he said, "Well, everything you're doing on stage is false. That is, these are not your words. These are not your relatives you're pretending they are. These are not your clothes. All the furniture's facing the same way. There are lights on you. You said these words last night. You're all facing the same way. There's an audience there with no wall. Everything here is fake, but the food is real. The food is real." And he was suggesting, I love this lesson. He said, "The object lends you its truth." Oh, it's so good. That's cool. Goosebumps for me. The object lends you its truth. The truth, the truthiness of eating food made the circumstances, everything else on that stage, more real for everyone. And it got better. It just got better. So now when I'm in the booth and I'm doing an audition for or a booking for some product, I put it in my hand. No matter how big it is, the new Acura. I put it in my hand, or I put it in my hand. What a swell coffee. I mean, no one can see the coffee, but I know it's there. I feel it, and it lends me its truth. That's what grad school did for me.
That's really cool. Is that kind of what led you to building that course that you were teaching, the transition from onstage acting to voiceover?
Yeah,
is
it was
kind
one.
Of like the foundation. What are some of the other things that tied into that? I'm really curious.
Well, I think it was the notion that when I first started, voiceover, I was already on stage doing a lot of stage acting, mm-hmm. and a lot of my stage actor friends said, "Hey, you've been doing a lot of voiceover," and I'd say, "Yeah," and they said, "How are you doing all that? You know, we want in. How do you right. do all that?" And I said, "Well, really, I have learned to apply what we're doing on stage into the booth." And they said, "Like, do tell." And I would email my friends things that I learned and things that I try and things that worked for me. It didn't necessarily mean it works for everyone. It works for me. Hmm. And all of those emails accrued over the years and sort of became the foundation of lesson plans, curricula.
Cool.
And I thought at some point that my parents are teachers, my wife is a teacher. I thought with their help, I could create. And I went to graduate school, so theoretically, I should be able to teach. I could devise a course that could help people. And I do. I teach an MFA program in Los Angeles, and I have been doing master classes and graduate programs across the country to sort of get voiceover into your theater schooling, because there's no really better place to learn it. And you don't want right. to go through all of that acting training and then leave school typically in debt and then have to first start taking voiceover lessons.
Right.
No. It's not the best time to learn it. You should learn it while you're learning your parallel skills of acting for stage or acting on film or singing, dancing, poetry, all at the same time. That's what I say.
So with all the teaching that you're doing, what are you doing on like a daily or weekly basis to build your own craft? Because I mean, I know you do, Bookable, you do like a lot of coaching and then you do a lot of classes and stuff. But what do you do to kind of like craft and build yourself?
Not enough. I mean, really, I have two kids and we just moved and I have TriBooth, which is my company where I build mobile booths for people. So I have that plus my own voiceover work, which takes up time. And then of course now I'm approaching 50 and I have other things I enjoy. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched this show. Well, you know, I like cooking, right? So cooking's a thing for me. I'm cooking a lot, but there's that show, the portrait artist of the year. Have you seen this? It's a British show.
Uh-uh.
It's sort of like,
I love British comedies, but like,
it's like a reality show, like a competition show, but it's finding the greatest portrait artist.
Okay.
So they have all these amateur and professional portrait artists come in and then they kind of cut them down to semifinals and the finals. And it's fascinating. I just can't get enough of it. Like first it was the British baking show.
Right, British Bake Off. That's what I was about to say. It's like the British Bake Off.
I can't stop. So now, like I took my son the other day and we drove out, or we walked.
What does the winner get? Do they get to be like the sketch artist for like true crime stuff? Where like they what is the prize?
They get a commission, a 10,000 pound commission to do a painting that will go forever in some kind of big national gallery. So like Tom Jones was the sitter for the final several seasons ago to go in this big Welsh museum. I mean, it's fascinating.
That's
it's just
cool.
So great. Yeah, I love it.
That's really
so,
cool.
So there's that. I took my son and we went to a park and we were sketching ducks, you know? So I have other things I want to do, which I think is right. You know, I love voiceover and it served me and my family so well. But I also know that we probably shouldn't spend that much time in a box. I mean, I just don't think that's how we were built. So I make sure to do my work in the box and then get out and then do other things, move my body, you know, jump up and down, run around. I'm thinking about taking dance classes with my wife, you know, just something to do.
So with all of these hats, like what does a day in the life of Rick Wasserman generally look like? Like, I mean, I know no 2 days are ever going to be the same, but like overall structure, like
it's pretty simple. I get up at 5 and I I do my morning routine slowly because I don't want to have to rush. I'm at the gym by 6. I work out for an hour. I'm walking everywhere. I don't get in a car yet. I walk home. I help the kids kind of get ready for school, help them. Now I don't make their lunches now. I help them make their lunches, sort of passing that baton. And I walk them to the bus stop, which, by the way, is entirely new for them. They've never been on a bus before, so now they're on the bus, which is kind of fun and kitschy for them. Yeah. And then my wife facilitates homeschooling for families. So she takes the car and she drives off and I'm home. And now, you know, I shower and do whatever's first. Sometimes there's voiceover bookings. Sometimes there's coaching to do. I also produce demos. So sometimes there's demos to work on or meetings to have with people about demos. Sometimes it's shipping booths. Sometimes it's taking long, long, long walks. I'm trying this new thing since we're new to Oregon. I just wander. I That's try beautiful. Not to have a goal. And I just see where the wind takes me and pray I don't get lost. And so far, I haven't.
Well, might need to get your wife to keep a GPS tracker on you.
You're not kidding. My sense of direction is not that hot. But then ultimately, everyone starts coming home. I make dinner. We eat. And every other night, the kids watch a little TV or we play a board game or something like that. And
You're also a junior prestidigitation connoisseur, correct?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a senior everything almost, but
right.
I'm
but I heard you enjoy magic.
But yes, I've been doing magic for a long time. I've been doing it since I've been a little boy, just really interested in it, and then it went away, and then later on in my life I did a play where I played Houdini. So I knew I had to learn it all, so I had two coaches. I had one for prestidigitation, right, close-up magic, and then I had another coach for a big kind of stunt magic, getting out of straitjackets, that kind of thing. And it was great. I went full-blown crazy,
like
Christian
so
Bale actor, gained muscle for it, like went nuts. The contact lenses, eyebrows plucked, it was nuts. But I had a really good time, and so started doing it again. And then Joe Cipriano had this this thing, he started this charitable effort called Primetime Voices for Children, where we would visit the Mattel Children's Hospital at part of UCLA in Los Angeles every Christmas and read to the kids. And because at the time I had young kids, I asked the nurse, I said, when do we come back? And they went, well, next Christmas. And I went, yeah, but what about next month? And what about kids that don't celebrate Christmas? And so I wound up going every single month. I would go and read, and then I realized that a lot of kids don't speak English and I don't speak another language, so my reading to them, it wasn't particularly interesting, except I'm fairly animated. But magic transcends a lot of that, so I would come and read or play or draw and do magic. So
that's
magic
cool.
Showed up in a really cool way in my life.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
So you were talking about shipping booths, like how did the Tri booth come to be? Like did you just kind of like didn't have a booth one time when you needed to book something? You're like, huh, this could be a business. Or like
it
how
came
did,
to me in a dream.
Right.
Well, it was one of those things. It was really a fairly greedy pursuit. I made it for me. George Whittam has been my engineer and I adore him. And we've been working together for a couple decades. He's another Philly guy like me. I'm a Philly guy. And very early on, he was my engineer, put together my first booth, which is the same booth I still use. And I had been steadily, at least for a decade, in that booth, just doing everyday voiceover. Listen, if you're lucky enough to be doing a lot of voiceover, the only drawback is you're not doing anything else.
Right.
Like we lived in Montanito, which is sort of Calabasas, Malibu adjacent. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous, but I never saw the light of day. I was in a booth the whole time.
Right.
So it's sort of like, well, what's the point? You know, I could be in Hoboken, I could be in, you know, Tijuana, I could be anywhere right now. I'm not going outside.
Right.
So I knew I had to get out of the box. And I told my wife, I'm going to have to be in a play. But if you're the voice of several networks, you can't just take the week off or take months off.
Right.
I had to have a way to record wherever I was going, whenever I could, right? Because it's not like a studio may not be open when I need it, or may not exist when I need it.
Right.
So I needed something. So George and I just kind of fumbled something together. It was not very sexy, but and it was a real leap of faith. Like, I'm going to go away now and I'm going to try to fool major networks, making them think I'm still in Los Angeles in my steel, you know, fancy glass booth. And I did. Why? Because I have George and we live in a magical time where such a thing is possible.
Right.
Technology is such that you can go away and do that. And because it worked, I knew I could do it again and again. So every time I booked a new show, I would say, George, let's build another one. But this time I want it to do this. And this time it should have this. And wouldn't it be easier if it had this? So we kept building it and rebuilding it and rebuilding it. And one time I said, listen, instead of shipping it, I want to put it on a plane with me, but it's got to be lighter. And I thought an easy way to get it lighter, it was like a big rectangle, is to lose one whole leg, right? And make it triangular. And I thought that would make it smaller. And it also, we didn't realize this, but acoustically being in a triangle seemed to be a more effective sound recording environment than being in a rectangle.
Really?
I tell people now it was
is it because of the, like, the parallel walls and stuff, or
I don't know.
That,
I mean,
that would work because, like, those aren't your actual. That's interesting.
When I'm in the booth, in the tri booth, my back is toward a flat end, and I'm speaking into the corner,
right?
And it deadens the sound, and it's still bright enough. I don't know. It works. It works. And
I guess it's kind of like you're talking into one big bass trap.
What's that?
I guess it's kind of like you're talking into like one big bass trap.
Maybe that's what it is.
That's
I'd like
cool.
to say that it was very intentional, but
yeah,
it wasn't.
Right.
It was just trying to make it lighter, which it was. So now it gets to go on a plane and it works. So I'm in New York City. I have my booth with me, and I can't name his name, but a very, very popular voice actor and Broadway actor sees my booth and he goes, "What is that?" I went, "It's my travel booth." And he said, "I'll buy it." I went, "Oh, no. It's not for sale." And he said, "Listen to me, make it so I can buy it." I went, "Okay." So I did. And then I made another one, and I made another one. And then 4 years later, we're trademarked and patented, and we sell them and ship them all over the world.
That's
a guy today took one to Paris. We've got video of people
crazy.
In Italy. It's awesome. There's several of them in Australia, which I get a kick out of. So.
Yeah,
I'm very proud of it, and I never knew that was, in the cards for me.
And George makes custom pop filters for each one.
They're not pop filters; they're digital filters. Stats.
Digital filter. Okay, I guess that's where I was confused. I was like, "How do you make a pop filter? Is a pop filter? How do you make a?"
Oh no, not
okay.
a pop filter. No, it's a digital stack for everyone that gets one. So they get one curated stack from George, which is sort of the ace up our sleeve, because.
Yeah.
You know, it already sounds really good, but once he makes the stack, he makes the stack sound like you at your home studio, if you have one. And if you don't have a home studio,
right.
he'll just make you sound as good as you possibly can.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man. So going back to like the voiceover stuff, I've been into one of your classes where it was like pushing like the voice acting intensive, pushing...
Uh-huh.
Where you kind of push your voice to the limits. How do you teach people to push themselves to the limits safely? Because I know video game acting is very, very intense and it can be very harsh on the vocal cords.
I mean, it's really not part of anything that I would teach to strain your voice at all. I mean,
right.
I know personally my voice reacts unpredictably if I push it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all treat our voices, especially if we're making a living with them, with great care. I'm sure I could take better care of my voice, but I recognize that there's a lot of sensitive anatomy going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
So if I decide I'm going to scream, not in the booth, you know, I'm at a game or I'm at a concert, I know I'm gonna pay for it. You know, I know it's wrong because I know what
I can't
go
to medieval times
voice.
Anymore. Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but in terms of work, I have been in a lot of Call of Duty games and a lot of war games and a lot of things where I've played Hulk, for goodness sake. So I'm not stranger to screaming and stuff. And I'll be honest with you, I've hurt my voice. I've hurt my voice because I want to do so well. Like, I want it to sound so good that all the lessons I've learned about supporting my voice and resonating, it goes right out the window and I'm starting to taste blood. You know, like, it's stupid. So I'm not afraid to tell people this, because even though I teach and even though I'm doing this professionally and feeding my family with it, I still do things that I wouldn't recommend to anyone else. And I'm not proud of them. I know that's a problem. I know it's something I need to work on. So I do have my eye on that.
Then what is the voice acting intensive?
I have many voice acting intensives. A couple of my workshops are more involved than others. Mm-hmm. And I would call those intensives. And it means that in a short amount of time, we're going to cover a whole lot of material. Like, I envision voiceover, the craft of voiceover, happening in three general phases, mm-hmm. like I also do for stage acting. Mm-hmm. I envision there's the work phase, where you do your research and dramaturgy, your table read, your script analysis. That's the work phase. And I also tell people not to do that work phase in the booth. Why? Because you're going to be too tempted to record it. I'll just record it. And something magical will happen. Don't do it yet. Don't do it. If this was Hamlet and it was the first day and it's a table read, no one's sneaking off to the Broadway stage to perform tonight. You're not ready. You shouldn't be ready. You've got work to do. Go do a little research about Danish royalty, but, you know, do that first. And then you go to the second phase of voiceover, which I call play. You do the work so you have the luxury to play. And I mean that. Once I'm in the booth, my time in the booth is short. I've already done all the work. I don't need to sit in that booth and record and listen back and record and listen. I play, do my best play. And then I leave into the third and final phase that I call review. I listen back, but I don't listen back, by the way, this is the hardest part. I don't listen back with any judgment. I don't listen back and go, nailed it, or that sucked. Neither of those, because I don't get to make those decisions.
Right.
Someone else makes those decisions, not me. And besides, my labeling any of my reads awesome or crap doesn't do me any good. It doesn't do me any good. It doesn't make me feel any better. I haven't learned anything. So what I do when I review is I ask myself questions like, is the story clear? Is it technically sound? Was the reason that commercial exists apparent in my read? Does it sound conversational? Not is it good or bad? So eliminating binary judgment has really helped my process, especially sort of emotionally, you know, because you could leave that booth going, or, oh, you know, and I don't do that anymore and haven't done it for years and years and years. So that is what an intensive is to me, learning a massive amount in a short amount of time.
Beautiful. That's fantastic. So if you were to write yourself a letter and you were going to send it back to yourself when you were first getting out of grad school, what would you tell your past self?
I guess I would tell myself, you know, smell the roses, enjoy yourself. I don't know. Sometimes I just say that I'm lucky. Well, I'm lucky. And I think I have been fortunate in some things, but I also know that I have worked really hard. So maybe the hard work contributes to the fortune. I don't know, maybe to allow myself to enjoy it a little bit more. I've always been kind of put my head down and work and worry and work and worry and work and worry. And that seems to have been my pattern. And, you know, I probably count on one hand the times I kind of lift my head up and went like, this is great. You know, I'm making my way through my life, through the world, by talking in a box. I don't have to break my back. I don't have to endure the hardships that so many other people do. And I don't know, I guess maybe this is the only kind of perspective you could have now. So yeah, if
Right.
I don't even know if my brain could conceive of that when I got out of grad school, but just to be grateful and to eat all the good food and to enjoy as much as you can.
Sweet, brother. Well, thanks for coming on, man. This has been a blast.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and thanks for sharing some coffee with me.
So I'm gonna go ahead and hold a Red Bull can as I'm doing this outro. Maybe you'll give me the prop I need. But I really hope you enjoyed listening to the wealth of knowledge Rick is on being a true actor in your craft and hearing about his amazing journey through the years. If you'd like to hear his demos, book him for coaching, or snag yourself a tri booth of your very own, you can visit him at rickwasserman.com. Thank you for stopping by, and I'll see you in the next episode. Did it sound better? Did it sound better with the Red Bull? I hope so.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit www.vocoffeeshop.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.